welcome to the Clock End Talk. I'm your host, Tez. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading and follow us at @clockend_talk. With us each and every week is Tony. How you going, mate?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Thanks, yourself?
Yeah, good, buddy. Good, considering we scraped in the Europa League, but the loss didn't help us. So we will discuss that as we continue on throughout this podcast. Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
Just about surviving this life, watching this abysmal team at times. But other than that, I'm just about fine.
It's a team that keeps giving, isn't it, mate?
And taking. More so taking than giving at this point.
Okay, let's get into it, boys. Ostersunds, they visit us at the Emirates, Tony, and we lost the game 2-1, mate. But let's get into the lineup first. What was your take on that?
I don't know if this was actually out on Twitter or just in our DMs. I can't remember, but Schwinn literally called the lineup player for player, so fair play to him. But it also shows that it was pretty much as expected. I mean, I didn't think Jack would play. I couldn't really put in a replacement for him. I thought Willock might start. But apart from that, it was, pretty much as expected. I personally thought he might drop Maitland-Niles to right back, seeing as Maitland-Niles is not going to have a Premier League start for Arsenal in the centre of midfield at least for the rest of this season, barring a catastrophe. So get him playing in a position where he might actually play for us as second choice right back. So I thought there was a chance of that, but barring that, the team was pretty much as expected.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Schwinn, you picked the lineup, did we, mate?
Well, I got. My first go at it was a little wrong because Tony corrected me in saying that Arsene Wenger said during his press conference that Nelson will be on the bench. So I actually had a 4-2-3-1 with Nelson on the right wing. But after I was told that he won't be featuring in the starting 11, I figured it would be Jack. But the only reason I picked that lineup with, you know, the likes of Bellerin in there and, you know, some of the other starters that you probably wouldn't think, you know, would feature is because the first leg wasn't a great barometer to judge Ostersunds on. I mean, we've discussed that they were in preseason, and the fact that after the first 25 minutes of the first leg, they sort of grew into the game. And I think the second leg was a pure indication of the fact that they came to play more so than we did. And I think, I mean, good on Arsene Wenger. I think that's the only time we're going to say that today. To realize that, to, you know, to not throw in Maitland-Niles at right back, which a position that could play, but hasn't really, you know, played too much there, if at all. So I know he's played left back, but, you know, positions are different in even if they're symmetrically the same. And you have to form new relationships. You know, maybe Callum Chambers and Maitland-Niles are not as comfortable, not as telepathic as you would imagine. So I think fair play to Wenger there in terms of picking the right, you know, veteran, if you will. But did it work? No, it didn't. We lost the game. I mean, it might feel like a victory because we made it through the tie. And, I mean, before we get into any of the rest, I think a special shout-out to Ostersunds. I mean, one of their biggest games, if not the biggest in their history. And, you know, they came victorious from the affair. So class outfit, great fans, buzzing atmosphere just from their side at least. And they deserve the result.
Then, since you brought up Niles, let's continue down that path, and I'll go to Tony first before I go to you, Schwinn. Tony, he's one of them players that we've seen lots of good things out of. He's played, you know, every position he's played in, he's shown us that he can manage it, but he's just that little bit too young to be playing in the mids, isn't he?
I don't put it down to age. I think if you're good enough, you're old enough. And I'm not going to compare him to Jack, but Jack was starting for us at 17 in the same position with a smaller build, arguably less athletic. So I don't think you can put it down to age or size or anything like that. I just think at the moment he's not good enough to play there. Anyone that listens regularly will know that I've been, let's say, picking arguments with people who have been just decided that he should be our starting defensive midfielder for the rest of the year, despite never actually seeing him play there, because he never had played there for us until Osterlund's away last week, when he was okay, but not unbelievable. And then I thought this week he was very poor. I'm not criticizing him as such, because it's very hard to be good when everyone else is bad, which they were. They were all bad. But it just shows that while people may not like Granit Xhaka, we looked a completely different team with him when he came on at half time than we did with Maitland-Niles. So people argue that Xhaka doesn't protect the defence, and you could potentially agree with that, but they didn't have a chance in the second half. They had many while Maitland-Niles was on the pitch. They moan about Xhaka's passing. Yeah, his radar may be a little bit off, but he attempted and I think completed more forward passes in his first 20 minutes on the pitch than Maitland-Niles and Elneny did in the first half. So it just shows that while a lot of people may not like Xhaka, there's levels to this stuff. Like, he's not captain in Switzerland and playing starring roles for them at major tournaments, played however many games in the Bundesliga, and now he must have played over 50 games for us by now, because there's other players better than him. I agree that there's a lot to not like about Xhaka, but you can't just say, oh, he's done this bad, this guy must be better, when Maitland-Niles he's not had a prolonged chance, but he's not shown us anything to say that he deserves that starting spot. But some people seem to have just decided that, and maybe out of frustration. But I think the game on Thursday showed that that isn't a viable option if we're actually trying to go forward.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, so what was your take on Niles, mate?
Well, I'll start with the positives, because I think he deserves a shout-out for those at least. He's very calm. I'll give him that. We're talking about his age and everything, and I agree with Tony that, you know, your age doesn't define you. Your play defines you. And to that point, I think, excuse me, to that point, I think he's very, very calm on the ball. He's very composed. He uses his body really well, too, to shield the ball from opponents. But when you're playing in that role, you know, when you're playing as one of the two holding midfielders, your number one priority has to be positioning when you're not that involved in the attack. Now, Elneny and Niles play a weird, weird pivot, you know, a dual pivot, you know, because usually you have one who's sitting back and the other who's doing the box to box. Elneny has these surging runs that he'll make from, you know, right in the middle of the park. That sort of leaves Niles or whoever's playing alongside him to take over that spot and sit between the defenders. To ask Niles to do that right away, even if he's done that throughout his youth career, is completely unfair, because it's a new team, it's a higher level, and everything that, you know, that comes with it. So I think there have been moments that have not done him favors. But, you know, that revolves around the style of play. That's not just to do with him. And that's the whole reason that, you know, I or anyone else who's been saying that he shouldn't be starting in midfield. It's nothing against him. It's about the team dynamic. You know, you wouldn't throw in necessarily a very strong yet slow fullback into our team, because that's not what we need. That's one of the reasons Kolasinac is struggling to get into the team. So it's nothing against them. It's just how they, you know, fit into the team fabric. I think he has a lot of potential. There's no denying that. You know, someone with his mental attitude and his calmness will play a strong role in the future, I feel, if he develops as we think he will. But he's not the solution. And as Tony, as you said, I mean, Granit Xhaka has got so much shit throughout the season. And instantly, as he came onto the field, he made us a better team. And I think that speaks more volumes than, you know, me, than I could go on about. So, again, be patient with him. Don't put him on a pedestal if he's brilliant. Don't knock him out of confidence if he's not. There's a learning curve, and he'll get there. Mm. Only if you give him time.
I can't disagree with that at all. Another player come under question, though, is Chambers. Look, personally, I feel that he's almost played himself out of the team. I don't know what your take is on Chambers, Tony, but I don't think he'll make the first team again.
It's a difficult one, because if you look on that game, he was awful. But as I said, most players were. So if you look at that, you could argue that none of them will be playing much again. So, I mean, for me, probably Bellerin was our best player, and he wasn't good. He was just not as bad as the rest. But you could look throughout the team and go, oh, he doesn't deserve to play anymore. He doesn't deserve, etc. And look, Chambers was at fault for both goals, in my opinion, and I'd assume the opinion of most. But it's just judging it on that one game. You could also say there's been games this season when he's been very good, and you, let's say you go Chelsea away in the League Cup when it was 0-0, and look at that and go, oh, maybe he should be starting every week if you're going to be like as rash and basing it on one game. I don't think he's anywhere near the first team, but I don't think he's playing himself out of ever playing again. He is still probably third choice centre back, I would say. I'd say that you've got Mustafi and Koscielny as our first two, and then after that, if there's an injury, I personally still think it's Chambers that comes in. You could argue for Holding. You could potentially argue for Monreal, but then that would be obviously playing Kolasinac at left back, which Wenger doesn't fancy, and I think Kolasinac has shown why. So I still have Chambers as our third choice, and with Koscielny's Achilles the way they are, I'd still expect him to play quite a few more games this season. But I mean, as I said, I think your point comes from just that one game, and I always think it's quite harsh to judge players on one game, especially when no one else around them was good. But yeah, he was awful.
I see what you're saying. You're like basing it on the one game, but I don't know if I've seen, and I haven't, look, I haven't done my research into this question either, but I haven't seen much from him by memory. Nothing in my memory stands out that, oh, wow, Chambers was excellent. Actually, I think there might have been one game. I just can't remember who it was. But I haven't seen a Chambers of what we have seen a little bit in the past.
But I think that's more a centre-back issue, because if I asked you to name good performances by centre-backs this season, you'd probably go Mustafi against Tottenham, but he scored. So you take out the attacking bit and the defensive bit, it's very hard to name, even from someone that's a self-proclaimed football geek like me, it's very hard for me to remember a time when a defender just had a solid defensive game. I literally, off the top of my head, I don't have one, and I'm sure people will tweet in or write in and whatnot and tell me of them, and I'll remember them when they say them. But again, to you or Schwinn, like, what name a defensive performance where the defending has stood out by an individual, and it's very hard to think of one.
Well, the only name that comes to my mind is Monreal.
Again, as I said, pick a game where he was standout, excellent defensively, and it will probably be one of the games where he scored or got an assist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he hasn't been good. I'm just saying that we tend, as a fan base or as people into football in general, not remember defensive performances unless it includes some form of attacking element.
Mm. Any dad, Schwinn?
Where do I start on Callum Chambers? I agree with Tony. It's harsh to, you know, just give in to him just for one performance. But those two goals we conceded were so brutal in terms of a damnation almost for Callum Chambers, because the first goal was unlucky. I'll give him that. But it shows horrible decision making to put your foot there. That ball was not on target. I don't think that shot was going in. I think that touch helped the ball to get into the net. Again, he got him. I mean, it was a tough situation, and if anything, he made it worse. His back was towards goal, so I'll give him that as well. But again, at that moment, you should know your positioning. You should know where the ball is going. You know, you expect that from a defender that plays for Arsenal. I agree with Tony as well that he is our third, center back in the current pecking order. Is that a good thing? I don't think so. But the second goal, I mean, that on toast, he put him on toast. And Sema is strong. He was quick. He had a brilliant game. I think he was their best performer, other than that, maybe their Iranian kid, I think Godosh, who was playing the number 10 role almost. But he has to do better there. Sema gets around him so easily, and Callum Chambers has no pace. I mean, in terms of acceleration, he's got nothing in his legs. I think his Arsenal career is over. And I don't say that just on the basis of Thursday's performance, but we know that, well, there were reports that Arsene Wenger wanted to get rid of him, and then he eventually changed his mind because he got an offer that he thought was too good. Well, not too good in the sense of it was too good to refuse, but maybe he thought there's something more to Callum Chambers than he realized, and I think that's one of the reasons we passed up on that offer. I'm sure he's regretting it at this point. but he's done. He's done at Arsenal. He's going to leave by the summer. At least I hope so.
I have to agree. I think he needs to go in the summer. However, in saying that, we need another squad player. So it's a catch 22. Do you find a better replacement for Chambers? Like, what were they saying? 15 million, Tony, or something? Last knocking around.
Arsenal wanted 20. And just to kind of agree with you two, I still think he'll play more games between now and the end of the season, but I do also think he'll be sold in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another player that I think everybody's scratching to talk about because he did cop a lot of criticism, and we've got to touch on Iwobi. Tony, let's go to you.
I've been saying this all season. I don't understand what he does. I don't understand what he's good at. I don't understand what he's there for. He was awful yet again. I see people trying to defend him because he worked hard. That should be the bare minimum. He has no attacking instinct in terms of scoring or creating goals. Someone will write in and say, yeah, but he got an assist against Everton. No, yes, technically he did. He played a 4-yard ball and someone hit it from 25 yards and it took a deflection and went in. That's not creativity. That's passing the football 4 yards. There's a difference. I don't understand what he does or what he offers. He makes the wrong decisions consistently. He loses the ball too much. He's decent at pressing, but he's not fit enough to do it for 90 minutes. And if you're going to press, you tend to want to do it for the whole match. There's no point pressing for 60. He's not good defensively. I don't understand what he brings. And this is not me jumping on the bandwagon from that one game. I've been saying this for a long time. He's better on the left than he is on the right. I'll give him that. And he's looked awful at times on the right, and he's looked slightly better on the left. But I don't understand what he offers. He's half quick, but he doesn't run away from anyone ever. And if he does, he cuts back, so he takes away his own pace. He's quite strong, but he doesn't use it. I literally do not understand what he offers.
Schwinn, what do you got on the way, mate?
God awful yesterday. Oh, day before yesterday, I should say. Very, very bad. I mean, I think only one of Welbeck or Iwobi can play in the team. Playing both of them is suicide because it's almost playing two additional midfielders and playing no attackers at that point. I think Tony's exactly right. He's one of those players who gets on the ball a lot. And that I mean, in his position, what's expected from him, that, you know, that has to be the case. But that's the bare minimum. He was very involved, but to what avail? I mean, you know, there was nothing he did that stood out, I feel. And when you're playing in that position as a creative fulcrum almost, it's confusing. Arsene Wenger has placed so much faith in him, and it's just not paying dividends. I don't know what is required of him because he's getting on the ball. He has runners. He has that overlapping run, you know, from a fullback, whether he's on the left or the right, Hector Bellerin. And, you know, the fullback is giving him that option. He seems to never get that ball right. Never. For some reason. He's always looking to cut in and then, you know, play either a square ball or one of those Alexis Sanchez looping balls. But it's not working. And, I mean, I do think that the game against Orsterson is not the right benchmark because if you look at Wilshere's performance, which I'm sure we'll get to, he suffered from a similar thing because Danny Welbeck is not the right number nine to play alongside Alex Iwobi and Jack Wilshere. They are both players who play to feet and you know, do those 1-2 passes to break lines. And Danny Welbeck doesn't do that. He stretches the field. You know, he's making those runs. And you need someone to drop a little deeper and make plays with these two, you know, with Iwobi and Jack. And that just wasn't the case. So apart from the fact that the number nine was not suited to either of them, I think they just had a bad performance. I don't think there's any way around it. And Iwobi especially, because from very early on, he was getting frustrated for no reason. You know, there is going to be a little bit of pushing and shoving. Ostersunds have come to play. They're not just going to gift you the result because, you know, you won 3-0 in the first leg. They're going to make you fight for it. And I think that took them by surprise. And they paid for it eventually. Well, we paid for it eventually.
Yeah, and I don't want to make this podcast about a beat-up of every player, but when you get beat 2-1 at home on a team, Tony, like Austinson's, there has to be room for criticism. Now, my other question, and I was looking at some stats today, boys, and Theo Walcott, now he's got 3 goals and 2 assists. He was our best player in the Europa League groups. Now, I was glad to see Walcott go for his own football career, but we never replaced him. So to me, that's a big worry, Tony.
I mean, I'll start off with an argument. This is where watching football with your eyes is better than looking at stats, because Jack was our best player in the groups by an absolute country mile, and it showed because he forced his way into the first team. Yeah, Walcott was our best goal scorer and provider, but then he also probably played more minutes than most others in the attacking positions. I'd assume, without even looking, I'd be pretty sure that him and Giroud played the most minutes. And that, and if you're in them attacking positions, it probably leads to you having the most output. There was an issue, and I think most people sort of highlighted it at the time of these sales, that we lost 5 players that were eligible to play in the Europa League, and bring in one, essentially. Well, it was only one. We lost Alexis, Walcott, Giroud, Coquelin and Debuchy, who had all played in the Europa League. And we bring in Mkhitaryan, who was the only player that could play in the Europa League. So that was always going to be an issue, and it's going to stay an issue the whole time we're in the competition. Is going to be an issue because we've got a very small squad to choose from. So yeah, it is an issue, but I wouldn't say Walcott was our best player. But yeah, could say the same about Giroud or Debuchy or Coquelin. We're just
Debuchy, you looked the other good. Day. Giroud was good also.
It's not even who was good, but you looked the other day and. If Debuchy was still at the club, it would have allowed Hector to have a rest the other day, and it would have been an adequate replacement, not taking a chance on youth. Coquelin would have probably started in the middle, or definitely would have started in the middle. Giroud would have started up front. Walcott would have started, and Alexis tended to not play in the Europa League. But of them 5 players that have gone, 4 of them would have started on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. But my problem is, although I say Walcott was good according to the stats, and it was an article I was reading today about it, but nobody replaced Walcott in that position. Well, I suppose.
As I said, it's not just Walcott. We've lost players in all positions that would have played. Like, as I said, it's easy to look at someone's output, but that is what it is. He played the most minutes, and he played in an attacking position. I don't believe it, but people could argue that if Welbeck could have played all 6 games, then he could have had similar numbers, maybe not as good, but. I think Giroud got, 3 goals? 2 or 3 goals?
3 goals.
And we've not replaced that either. You don't expect him really to get assists. But he was more integral to the play than Theo was. So it's we didn't replace the players. I don't think that you can just pick up, you can name one player. We lost 5 and bring in one.
Mm-hmm.
The names are pretty much irrelevant. They're 5 players that would have played. Or, as I said, you could maybe take out Alexis. But 4 of them definitely would have played. And we only bring in one that could and did. That's where your issue is.
Yeah, okay. So, now on a losing team, you guys wanted to talk about Wilshere. So, Tony, he was your best player by far?
No, not on Thursday.
No?
He was awful.
Okay.
No, he was awful. I thought Hector was our best player. And I say that very loosely. Jack, I've said this before. And I tweeted this the other day, and I think a few people misunderstood what I meant. I love Jack Wilshere. I never, ever, ever want him to see him play as a number 10 again. And I've been saying this all year, and people have argued with me at times. And I know football's about opinions, but if you have the opinion that he's a number 10, you're wrong. Your opinion is wrong, and change it. He needs to have touches on the ball. He's creative from deep. He's very good at breaking lines with the ball. Where he's just stood in them positions, he's nowhere near as effective. And he's only going to be passing over a short distance because as a 10, you do that. You never think of Ozil playing long balls. He's known for his short, intricate passes. And Jack's probably the opposite. I wouldn't say, I'm not saying he plays long balls, but his range of passing is what is noted, not he's playing little 3 or 4 or 5 yard balls. And also, he doesn't get to build up speed running at people, because when you play as a 10, it's very rare that you get to run at people. Again, using Ozil's example, there's not many occasions we think of him running and beating people. It's what he does with the ball. I think with Jack, it was more a positional thing than... It was a poor performance, but I think it was due to position.
So just quickly, again, looking at that, you're talking about position. Looking at that team, how it lined up, where would you rather see Jack play and where you switch Jack? Where would you want it to be? And who would you
I'd sit him deeper alongside whoever's the designated defensive midfielder, whether any of them decide to defend or not, is a different story. But Jack's better when he can pick the ball up and create from deep. You'd play him deeper. I think he struggled because people think he can play there, or he has played there before. Mm. So in that team, you look at who was going to do the attacking, and he's more qualified to do the attacking than Maitland-Niles or Elneny. So he played further up, but it wasn't for the good of the team. I'm not saying it's his decision, but
yeah.
For me, if you're going to play a Jack and he is a first team player in essentially a second team, then you put him in his strongest position to try and have the most influence on the game, not play him in somewhere where he's barely involved. I personally think it was an audition for Sunday for the cup final, and I think it's one he failed miserably.
Okay. Schwinn, you got anything on Jack?
Yeah, I have to say this was the manager's mistake. I mean, to play him in that role is stupid. We haven't seen him do that in a while. You cannot expect players to suddenly switch roles as if, you know, I mean, no offense to any of our players, but there's not a whole lot of players in our squad who are at that level, who can, you know, play on the left one game and then switch to the middle the next, drop deeper the very next. It doesn't work like that, and that just shouts panic from the manager's side. I mean, I understand you want to bench some players and, you know, give some a breather, but as Tony very correctly said, that when you're playing someone in your team, you have to play them in their correct position. It doesn't matter who they are. I mean, even someone of Mesut Ozil's caliber, you know, when we put him on the right, he's not that influential. What does that tell you? It was a stupid decision. I think the 4-3-3 that we played against Tottenham has scarred Arsene Wenger. And I think that's the reason he didn't play a 4-3-3 yesterday or on Thursday, excuse me. Having said that, I think he'll revert back to a 4-3-3 on Sunday. And I wouldn't be surprised if we play a three-man flat midfield in the cup final. So it just screams panic. It screams, you know, a lot of improvisation. And I mean, Arsene Wenger, no one knows Jack Wilshere better than Arsene Wenger. And to see him do that is just so, so perplexing to me. And I don't know what the boss was thinking. I have to say, this has to go down as a manager's mistake, because with his back towards the goal, Jack Wilshere will not give you what he's, you know, what makes him Jack Wilshere. He's great at driving at defenders from deep. He needs to build up that pace. So he's quick on the turn, draws a few challenges. And I think it was just a stupid, stupid decision, a naive decision from the manager. And I have to say that this is also indicative of us not giving the opposition enough credit. I'm sorry, but that's what it goes down to. And I mean, we bit the dust. The result speaks for itself.
But in that team, who plays the number 10?
You don't play a number 10. You play a 4-3-3 with Jack Wilshere, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, and Elneny. Mm-hmm. And you'd throw Iwobi and Nelson perhaps on the wings, or, you know, Mkhitaryan as someone on the wing, and Welbeck plays the 9. Anyway, everything comes through the middle anyway. So depending on where the attack is coming from, if you're attacking from the right side, then, and Iwobi is on the left, then Iwobi comes in middle, and so that we have numbers on the right side. You know, if you're attacking from the left, then Mkhitaryan comes central. And then you have Jack, who's sitting, you know, at the halfway line, maybe a little further ahead, and he's that out ball. So if there's pressure on him, you give the ball back to him. He can switch the flank, or he can, you know, have a couple of jockey moves and then run at defenders, open some space. With his back towards the goal, he's going to get bullied off the ball unless he gets those half turns really, really quick, which, you know, you're only going to get those so many times a game. You're not going to be effective on the ball. And that's what Jack fell victim to. It was stupid to play him in that position. I don't think there's any other way of justifying that.
Okay, just to wrap this game up, because we've got a couple other things to get on to. We want to talk quickly, Tony, about Klozinac. Thoughts on how he performed?
Yeah, well, Wenger's always said he doesn't trust him in a back four. And many people who, I don't know how much they've seen of him, just saw that he got in the Bundesliga team of the year as a left back and decided that he could play in a back four. I've not watched him in Germany, so I can't really add on that debate. What I've seen this season at Arsenal, I make Wenger exactly right. He cannot play in a back four. He's defensively not good enough. He's not fit enough to get up and down. He seems to be able to hit sixth gear going forward and barely struggles to get in reverse to come back. What he's shown so far, purely in an Arsenal shirt, he's shown nothing that lends him to playing left back.
His name pops up every week on our podcast, doesn't it?
Well, as I said, I think he had a good start in a back five.
Mm.
Again, it went down to, because he's a new signing, people wanted him to be good. And as I said, I've mentioned this so many times. There was one game where I tweeted at halftime that he'd been awful. But I think he either got an assist or came very close to getting an assist. And people went, oh, but he got an assist. You don't know what you're on about. He's a defender. His defensive performance was awful in, as I said, whatever game that was.
Mm.
It was like, even so, I come out of the ground the other day and I look back through all the tweets that we received during the game. And when he scored, people go, oh, that's him redeemed himself for his first half. No, it isn't. He was awful in the first half. Just, you can't have a 2 out of 10 performance, score a goal, and oh, that's okay then. And if people think that, and then they're going to start calling for him to start playing the next game, then that's not how it's going to work. That Wenger isn't going to think, oh, he was shit that he scored, so let's start him. He's going to think, well, he was shit. I can't take that risk every week.
I was the same. I was pretty critical of him at half time, and then he turned around and scored, and people said, oh, well, he's redeemed himself. And I thought, well, just because you score a goal doesn't mean you redeemed yourself.
Now, as I said, he's still in that phase where people, I hate saying want him to be good, because we want every player to be good, but when someone's new, they get given that leeway. If Danny Welbeck played, obviously I know it's very different positions and whatnot, but if Danny Welbeck played exactly the same game as Kolasinac did, awful in the first half, scored at the start of the second half, and then was a 5 out of 10 for the rest of the game, people would still be hammering him. They'd say, oh, he was shit, but he scored. Whereas, because it's Kolasinac, and as I said, people still want him to be a well-beater, that it's, oh, he was okay. Just because he got the goal, that changed his whole performance into, oh, he redeemed himself. Where, as I said, I think it's just the goodwill he's getting because he's new. And you get that when either you're a new player or you're a youth player, you tend to get a bit of goodwill from the fans. And I think he's still riding on that wave.
And I hate to ask this, but who was your worst player?
It won't be.
Okay.
Schwinn,
just touch on Klozinac, mate.
Oh, I would rather not, to be honest. I mean, his ineptitude doesn't bother me, to be honest, because there are certain players who perform at, you know, in different leagues, and they cannot replicate their form in the Premier League. What bothers me, and I remember bringing this up a few episodes ago, and Tony was against the suggestion that, you know, Granit Xhaka was scouted wrongly. You know, we probably thought he was a defensive midfielder, or maybe, you know, it's just what fans concocted, based on what they saw on Twitter and here and there, and then called himself a defensive midfielder. And I had suggested that maybe we didn't scout him, you know, accurately. But this Kolasinac saga, I have to say, it has to come down to that. You know, despite him getting those accolades, right, in the Bundesliga, whoever was scouting him did a horrible job of explaining to his bosses at Arsenal that, you know what, he'll be able to do this at our club. It has to go down as a mistake for the scouting department, in my view. There's no denying that a lot of this responsibility is on Kolasinac, right? Whatever he performs on a given day has to be attributed to him. But why we brought him in, it still boggles me, because maybe he was brought in to play in a back three, but then you have to have the long-term vision of playing a back three throughout, and you have to have a plan B for him, that if he switched to a back four, what does he do? There seems nothing, no structure around him. And of course he's going to suffer from, you know, confidence problems. Again, I'm not cutting him slack here because a lot of responsibility rests on him. But, I mean, that goal was lucky, if you ask me. I mean, he just thumped it. I don't think he knew where he was hitting that.
The ball fell to him,
yeah. And kudos to him for being in the right position, no doubt. But I don't think it was a controlled finish. I think he was, I mean, his celebration, I think, was more of relief than anything. It just boggles me. What are we thinking? There are times when, you know, I just feel like we should just burn the club to the ground and start over. I feel we'd be better off that way. Because some of the questions that come into my mind are so basic, you know.
I'll just
you might as well move on.
I'll just flip the coin very quickly and just think on another perspective, and you guys may disagree. We got him for free. He was the left back of the league in the Bundesliga. Somebody's seen something and gone, he's free. Like, is that the thinking of it, Tony? This guy's free. He's won the Bundesliga bloody award or whatever, best player of the year. We want this guy.
I don't think the team of the year thing comes into it. I mean, when the signing was announced. He was signed before he was made the left back of the year or named in the team of the year in the Bundesliga. So they'd obviously watched him for a while. It wasn't like, oh, he must be good because he's got in the team of the year and he's free. I think he was signed in March. I think it was. It was early March. As I said, they didn't announce it until, I think, in June in the end. But it was done a long time before. Obviously, you can agree pre-contracts with people out of contract.
Yeah.
Again, and probably unsurprisingly, I'm going to slightly disagree with Schwinn in that I think the whole club at the start of the season was focused on playing a back five. And I know I'm quite critical of Kolasinac, but I don't think he really had a bad game in a back five. He had bad moments. So whether they saw him and thought his attacking instincts are very good, his defensive instincts aren't the best, but in a five you can get away with that, in the same way as obviously at the start of the season Chamberlain was playing on the other side, who again attacking instincts were very good and defensive not so good. I agree that there's been no plan B, but maybe, especially with the run of results we had at the end of the year, Wenger thought we're playing a back four and that's the way back five, sorry, and that's the way we're going to go forward. And then when that has changed, it's obviously affected Kolasinac immensely. But I don't think you can always have a plan B in mind when you sign players, especially if you're quite set in that you're going to play a certain system. There's always, when you change a system, there's always people that suffer. I've gone on about Theo Walcott endlessly, that he was the main sufferer from us changing to a back three or back five, whatever you want to call it. And I think Kolasinac has been the opposite. If we play a back five, it benefits him. And if we don't, he's going to be the victim. But no, I don't think we've just thought he's free and he's got in the team of the year, so we'll sign him, because, as I said, it was done way before that. Okay. And they watch players for a while.
My other question, and I'd love to see some stats on this, or I'd love somebody to show me some stats or something. How many players have come to the Premier League in their first year and fans have put it down to a fail?
There'll be no numbers. It's in,
like, just the top of your head. Like, how many players could you rattle off first season hiccup, but then they've come good the second season and they've settled into the Premier League?
Oh, look, there is definitely an adjustment process, and you can name endless amounts of players that have struggled. But I think you have to look at why they've struggled and what's caused it. If there's just big flaws in their game, or if they're slightly off the pace or slightly not fit enough, then that stuff can and will change. And that's when you tend to get the people come good, so to speak. Mm. When there's big technical deficiencies, then that's when the issues sort of come into it.
I'm just trying to find a positive in amongst the negative, mate. So.
Oh, yeah, no, look, he could. I don't think he'll ever be able to play in a back four. Wenger doesn't think he'll be able to play in a back four. a lot of people think Wenger's clueless, so they might completely disagree with that. But as I said, I've personally not seen anything that shows me he could play in a back four.
Okay. You guys got anything else to add on that game? We're through.
Well, the only thing I want to say is I was over the result about 20 minutes after, and I often listen to a radio phone-in show as I'm driving home, and they pretty much didn't mention the result. Look, Osterlands will remember it forever. We won't remember it in 2 weeks.
Mm.
We might not even remember it in 2 days from now. It is what it is. We got through. Were we awful? Yes. On the grand scheme of things, does it matter as a team? Probably not. Does it matter for some of the individuals? Yes. But as we're all support, the majority of us are supporters of Arsenal Football Club and not individuals, I think a lot of fans seem to have blown over, the exact opposite. They've read too much into this game. And look, we all know the media love to hammer us, and none of the media have really even gone that hard on the fact we've lost to a team who don't earn as much in a month as Ozil does. It's the game, I think, on the grand scheme of things, yes, it's a horrible loss, but it's inconsequential on the grand scheme of things, except for individual players.
I think if we bowed out against them, then it'd be different.
Oh, no, yeah, that's a completely different story. But that's what I'm saying, we didn't. So
yeah.
There's no point dealing with stuff that didn't happen and could have happened. When I've said to people, it's a bit nothing in the end, apart from a horrible performance, they've gone, oh, but if they would have scored that penalty, or we could have. But if my aunt was born with a cock, she would have been my uncle.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can't deal with ifs and buts. If this happened, if that happened, then the whole sport would be different. But
yeah,
them ifs didn't happen. And if the 1966 World Cup final goal was judged to have not gone over the line, what would have happened? We don't know, but it's ifs and buts. We can only deal with what actually has happened.
I just wonder, too, whether Wenger's thinking to himself, well, this is, what, the second time I've put these young guys in to a team, and the second time they've lost? What trust, I wonder, does he have to the younger players now?
As I said, he's got to be... Look, it was a perfect opportunity. Had the first leg been 0-0, we would have seen the first team out. And look, remember back to before the first leg, everyone, including us and including all people that ask questions and whatnot, said, oh, go and get a strong result in the first leg so we can rest people in the second leg.
Yep.
That's exactly what we did. But then because we've lost the second leg and look, it wasn't a good enough performance, people are going, oh, it was disrespectful to play that team. I don't know anyone at all that suggested we should do otherwise. I personally thought he went stronger than I thought he would have done. And it was a godsend he did in the end. But I think people criticism after it's happened, and I always say this, you've got to say what you think before something happens, so then you can't criticise after if you agree with exactly what he's done.
Oh, look, I agree. It's the team he was going to line up, but I look at the, was it the FA Cup where we bowed out against Nottingham Forest with a similar team, was it?
Yeah, pretty much. The thing is you've got to look at now is that team won't play again. Because the final is obviously, they played largely in the cups, of which one was an easy group, one we're in the final with, so that ends on Sunday regardless. And then the Europa League, now we're up against stronger teams.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're going to get onto the draw later. But so now that team has no calling for that second string. And it is what it is, they are a second string side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bloody hard one, isn't it? But look, we got through, boys, and we move on to the last 16 now. So we'll move on to that one shortly. But I just want to touch quickly. There was an interesting conversation running around, and I just want your thoughts, boys. So Schwinn, I'll go to you first, and then you can answer Tony. Lacazette. Now, a lot of people are saying he's due to his injury, he's been his poor form throughout the season. So, I don't know whether you know, or Tony probably does, but I'm not aware of it. Was he carrying a niggling injury from the time he started with Arsenal, and that's why his form's been a bit low? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I couldn't tell you what the reality is because, you know, we were only made aware very recently that to when the operation happened. So, I don't know what the behind-the-scenes action is, but I can tell you one thing for sure. I mean, Olivier Giroud has said it before, and I think very recently Kevin De Bruyne has said it, that only for 10 games in a season do you feel up to it. And for the rest of it, you pretty much feel like shit. So I don't know about the injury. I don't even know how bad the injury was, to be honest. What I do know is that you will never feel 100% in the Premier League, you know, in English football. You have a lot of other competitions and you don't have that winter break. So, you know, you'll never be 100% just right off the bat. But as for specifics, I cannot imagine the injury to be too bad. I mean, it wasn't even bad enough to keep him out of the side till the time Aubameyang came. So I don't think it was, as Arsene Wenger likes to call it, he was not in the red zone. But I'm sure there was a little bit of a niggle, you know. It's hard at that level to come back every week, week in, week out with every added pressure. So I'm sure there was something bothering him. Was it enough to keep him out of the side initially? No, it wasn't. So should it be an excuse now? No, it shouldn't be, in my mind.
Tony, you got any add on that?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I was going to say is you said the conversation's going around. I've only seen it from one person whose opinion I have no respect for whatsoever.
Well, I didn't want to single him out, so I mentioned a few people.
One, it's not like an ongoing conversation. It's one person said it and they've not backed it up. It's just they've decided. And again, it comes down to the goodwill Lacazette's getting because he's new and because he costs a lot of money. Because there's just different excuses for him. Oh, Wenger's dented his confidence by not playing him. Oh, look, he started 10 games in a row and only scored one. We've got to blame something else. Or Wenger signed someone else, that's dented his confidence. Blah, blah, blah. As Schwinn said, and I think I said it on the pod a few weeks ago, Schwinn said 10 games. I don't think it's that many, especially for a new player in the league, is not 100% fit pretty much ever. And Schwinn brought up Giroud, and there's a quote I remember, which, as I said, I think I said on here a few weeks ago, that he was still had bruises from games 3 months before in his first season with us. He just wasn't used to it at all. So Lacazette may be carrying knocks, but nothing that's enough to stop you performing. I don't think if he was carrying injury, which I don't think he was until maybe the last couple of weeks, he definitely hasn't been carrying it all year. He's not been carrying an injury that would affect him that much. He might have had a little niggle. And it's one of the biggest criticisms of Daniel Sturridge is that, I think, was it Rodgers or Klopp said that the problem is with him that he only wants to play when he's 95% fit or more. And in the Premier League, you are never that. So it's an issue he's going to have to deal with. If he can't play at 90%, 70% fit, then sorry, you're not going to make it in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. He's due back, I think, in a couple of weeks, isn't it? We discussed last week.
They've just moved it forward, apparently. So the apparent expected return date is the 15th of March, which would be the second leg against Milan.
He probably won't feature till the end of this month, till the end of March. Coming back from injury, some rehab. I think I'll be surprised if you see him play in March. Maybe the last game of the month, but you know he might feature as a sub in a Premier League game. But I don't think we'll see him over the next two Europa League games.
Well, they originally said it was the 22nd, which would have been the Thursday after, which I think would be Europa League. Which would be an international break. I think they may have said the 15th because I think we've got a league game after that and then it's an international break off the top of my head.
Okay. Righto, boys. Let's get into... we're heading to Wembley for a cup final. Against City, what are we expecting, Tony? Line-up?
So the line-up's an interesting one because, as I've said, I think a few players have played themselves not out of contention. I fully expected us to start with a back four with a three in midfield of Elneny. See, this is where I think Elneny will play because I think he's able to drop into that to make it a back five, as Wenger likes to do. The issue I have now is I think Jack, as I said earlier, I touched on it earlier, that I think Jack was an audition on Thursday because I think he wants to play Elneny, Xhaka and Ramsey in the middle, Ozil and Aubameyang. And then it's who plays the other role. And I think Thursday was an audition for Jack, one I think he failed miserably. Which leaves the other option is Iwobi, who also failed miserably. So it's a tough one. I don't know if you'll move Ramsey further forward, but you lose his energy. I don't know. I personally would go with Jack, because then when we don't have the ball, it'll be sort of a 5-4-1 and use Aubameyang's pace on the break. When we do have the ball, obviously Ozil stretches out, Jack can push forward, and Ramsey uses his engine to push forward. That's personally what I would do, but I think, when I said earlier, I think as a club, Thursday wasn't that damaging, but I think it was damaging for a few individuals. That's what I meant, in that I think there was a few auditions failed, so it makes Wenger's selection on Sunday a lot more difficult.
Schwinn, what's your predicted lineup, mate, against City?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick 11. Ospina in goal, Mustafi, Koscielny at centre-backs, Monreal on the left, Hector Bellerin on the right. Three-man midfield of Elneny and Xhaka, plus Ramsey if he's back to 100% and there is no injury scare. If there is, then we'll see Jack starting, I feel, instead of Ramsey. Up top, Mesut Ozil on the right, Danny Welbeck on the left, and Aubameyang as the striker. That would be what my predicted lineup would be.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking Ospina and goals, Mustafi, Klesenich. No, I don't. No, Klesenich won't play. Koscielny, Bellerin, Monreal. I think he'll go with Wilshere, Xhaka in the middle. Possibly Ramsey, Ozil, Wobi, and Aubameyang up front would be more predicted. Tony, what do you... How do we go into this game, mate? Like, tactical against City.
I think you've got to start off and accept that they're going to have the vast majority of the ball, which means you're going to probably have to look to play on the break, which is why I think he'll play Elneny in that midfield, and so he can drop into a five. It's similar to what he done at the Etihad with Coquelin. Coquelin played pretty much as the middle of the centre-backs, and he was meant to push out when we had the ball, but we didn't really have the ball. So that made things a bit more difficult, but I think that's what he'll do. Except they've got a lot of ball. Try and play on the break. What we didn't have at the Etihad, if I remember rightly, I know Lacazette didn't play, but if I remember rightly, Alexis started up front, and Alexis doesn't run away from the ball, as we know. So I think the plan's going to be to sit deep when we do get the ball, use Aubameyang's pace in behind. It may be channels because their fullbacks push up very high. So use Aubameyang's pace in the channels and then try and get Ozil, Jack, if Jack plays, or Ramsey or Welbeck or Iwobi, whoever plays, in support and kind of play like a counter-attacking team. As I said, I don't think you can go an eye for an eye with City. Not at the moment. I don't think we're playing well enough, and I think they're playing too well for that. So that's how I would set up tactically. Others may disagree. I think that gives us the best chance of winning the game.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on... I didn't see the game where City... I think they lost the FA Cup against... I'm trying to think who it was now. The other couple of those games.
Wigan. Yeah, Wigan.
How did they set up in that game?
A bit similar to what I've said. Like, it's different. It's a small pitch. They're at home. It's cold. It's seen as a derby. It's not. But... They defended for their lives. They played on the break. They exposed City's attacking intent, in a sense. As I said, their striker ran the channels to try and stretch the pitch. And they had a few chances. Obviously, City had more of the ball, but they were happy with that. I think the problem comes with City, and it would be for us, is we're used to having more of the ball. And we get a bit, I don't want to say upset, but we get a bit rattled when we don't have the ball.
Mm.
I think you're just going to have to accept that because, as I said, if you try and go toe-to-toe with them, you're very... we're capable of winning, but it's very unlikely. So, yeah, Wigan defended quite deep, which meant City pushed up. City defended on the halfway line or maybe a tiny bit deeper. And their striker ran the channels, and then they busted a gut to get in support of him. But for the goal, obviously it was 1-0, they didn't need anyone to get in support of him. He ran the channel and the defender made a mistake and it gave him an angle to run in on goal and he ran in one-on-one, good finish. But yeah, it was pretty much, it was very similar to the game plan I think I would go with. As I said, defend deep, limit spaces, you may have to ride your luck at times, but then when you do get the ball, try and hit him on the break and get in support of that man, whoever that is.
I was just having a look at that game while you're talking. City had a red card as well, Delf, so.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously had a massive impact on the game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, getting back to our game, you got a prediction?
10-0.
Schwinn, you got a prediction?
I think we'll lose. I think we won't be able to come through. I think a 4-3-3 is going to come bite us in the ass. Contrary to Tony, I don't think we should sit back. I think City is sort of in a lull, if you can call it that right now, by their standards. I don't think we have the defensive solidity to sit back for 90. I don't think we have the attacking clinic, considering Mkhitaryan is missing. Ozil, Mkhitaryan, and Aubameyang still haven't quite learned to play together. But when you have that quality, then you sort of have a game plan that relies on that individual quality in moments, but we don't have that yet. And if we have Welbeck or Iwobi playing up front, you know, they're going to be good at pressing the ball, but in terms of finding that final pass, I don't think they have it in them. So I think Pep is going to realize that Mesut Ozil once again will be the guy to watch out for, and maybe Fernandinho or someone is going to be marking him and, you know, essentially be his shadow. I think in terms of a tactical plan to win this game, we need to have a 4-2-3-1, essentially throwing an extra body up top so that we can press higher. I think we have to go toe-to-toe with them. Against the big teams, when we've sat back, we've often found the results go against us. So I think we need to spread the field. I think we need to engage in a high press. Having said that, as City beat the press, I think we need to retreat. We cannot leave bodies forward. But at the same time, we shouldn't plan in such a way that we are willing to give up possession. I think that would be the end of us, because they have they have players returning back from injury, and they can find that killer through ball. So I would personally set us up to attack more than defend. It might be a little more romantic, but having seen the results this past, you know, past few weeks and this past season, I think I would fancy our chances if we went toe to toe with them.
So what's your losing prediction then? By how many?
2-0 to City.
Miserable cunt.
I'm sorry. I know. I don't want to be a buzzkill. I hope I'm proven wrong. There's nothing I would love more than you and Tony and our special guest that we are planning to sit and tell me how wrong I was. I will gladly take it, but I have to say what I honestly feel.
I'm going to go 2-1 Arsenal and Aubameyang Xhaka to score. No, Aubameyang Ramsey to score.
Ah, don't change that Xhaka prediction. I love that.
I think because I don't know. Yeah, no, I'll go Ramsey. Ramsey comes back, so yeah, Aubameyang Ramsey.
Okay. No 40-yard screamer.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? Anything else to add on that, Tony?
No, pretty much as confused as everyone else about it, to be fair.
Okay, let's get on to some questions, boys. Tony, Sam Spade, do you think Wenger now has to start going with his best 11 in the EL?
I do. I agree. I think he showed that was his plan anyway, with what he done, how we set up away at Östersunds. Obviously, the second leg we thought didn't require it, and in the end it didn't. But obviously, we had some shaky moments. But I think he's showing all intentions that is what he will do. It's just he had an opportunity to rest people before a cup final, so he done it. I dare say if we go and win 4-0 out in Milan, which we won't, but if we did, he may rest players for the second leg again. But in general, I think he's shown all intentions that we will be going full strength in the Europa League.
Okay, we won't touch too much on the Europa League because we have a special guest coming up after the City match, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, but the preview of the Milan game will probably have a couple of Italians, won't we?
So you two have arranged that. I know we will have an Italian league expert coming on. I'm not sure of the date.
Yep. Okay. Vish, for you, Schwinn. Who do we hold accountable for the display on Thursday? Alex Ferguson would never have allowed his team to be lured into complacency. Do I blame Wenger for not keeping this team hungry to win despite how weak the opposition may seem? Or are these players just not good enough?
It's a good question, and it's even better worded, if I'm honest. I mean, tell me this, Vish. I'll wait to get your answer from, you know, once you hear this podcast. But if you're Ainsley Maitland-Niles, what more do you need to be hungry? And I'm not trying to dig Ainsley Maitland-Niles out here. You know, the same question can be asked of Kolasinac. The same question can be asked of Welbeck. You know, more so Welbeck than Niles, perhaps. I understand that the manager is the face of the team, and that, you know, I mean, I blamed him for playing Jack in that role, you know. So there are instances where you have to see where the manager faltered, but it's not one person who you can pinpoint. It's a team sport. It's a tough question, because there has to be someone who has held accountable. You know, there's no denying that. But I don't think there's just one person you blame. I mean, Callum Chambers can be blamed to an extent. Rob Holding can be blamed. Niles, as I said, Welbeck, perhaps one of the you know, ones who should be blamed as well. So as much as I want to give you a definitive answer, I don't think that's fair on the others, because I think it's a collective responsibility, and I think it was collectively shed.
I think what he's pointing out, though, is Alex Ferguson, he'd never allow his team to be lured into this complacency, would he?
No, he probably wouldn't, but then Alex Ferguson has more options. You know, he would probably go and buy someone. You know, I don't want to again suggest that Alex Ferguson went out and bought players all the time, because that's not entirely true. But there is an element of that as well. Arsene Wenger is way more loyal to his players than Alex Ferguson was. Would you choose that or that? You know, I'm not saying I would take one or the other side, even though I think our listeners know whose side I would take. But that's not what I'm trying to do here. I don't want to make this a Sir Alex Ferguson thing. I think that's just a surrogate for this question. For who do you hold accountable? I think Arsene Wenger is a little more shackled, as horrible as that might sound, because usually you don't associate shackles with Arsene Wenger, but he's more loyal to his players. You know, he's more loyal to Iwobi. I don't think there's a case against that, but it's a collective responsibility. And as much as I would like to blame one person, I don't think that rings true here.
I'll stick with you. Go, Tony.
Oh, just very quickly, I meant to say this earlier, but I forgot. In terms of just in a very small circumstance, we have a cup final coming up on Sunday. The way I see it, that game was an audition for at least four of them players, if not all 11. You could argue that all 11, if they had a 10 out of 10 game, may have forced their way into the team on Sunday. If they can't motivate themselves for that, you could argue that the manager should do more. But if you can't motivate yourself to try and win a place in a cup final team, the first person that has to be looked at is yourself.
I agree.
Hear, hear.
I'll stick with you, though, Schwinn, because Vish has asked another question, and you might interact with him a bit on these questions on Twitter. So after the dismal display on Thursday, would you still play Welbeck and Iwobi? Yes, they are good at pressing the ball and stretching defences, but what's the point when they have no end product? Welbeck is so bad that he couldn't even score in a brothel.
That's a cheeky comment, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, as I said, don't play both of them together. I don't think that brings enough value to our attack, because at the end of the day, that's their job, to attack. I think Vish is onto something here, because when both of them play together, they're, you know, we're very retreated in terms of our prowess going forward. I mean, I would think that even if you put Mesut Ozil and Aubameyang in with them two, we'd still be a little handicapped up top. So he's exactly right. I wouldn't play both of them. I would play one of them, and considering Iwobi's performance, which probably was as bad as Welbeck's, one could argue, although I think Welbeck had a better game. I think Welbeck will feature on Sunday, and Iwobi will be on the bench.
Okay, Tony from MAA Gunner. He's got two questions here, so I'll just rattle them both off if you can remember them. So What would you imagine happens on Sunday with Lacazette and Mkhitaryan out? And do you think we set our standards high for Bellerin when he first burst onto the scene?
So the first part of that question, I think we've pretty much answered with, I mean, we've had opposing views, me and Schwinn, but I've answered my part of that with how I think we'll set up. And obviously that I've done that without Lacazette and Mkhitaryan in mind because I know they can't play. So I think we've kind of answered that part of the question. In terms of the Bellerin, yeah, I think we did massively. Again, he came through the system or to an extent he came through the system. Or any young player coming in, they get that goodwill that I spoke about earlier, where you're either a new signing or if you're a local boy or if you come up through the system. And I think he got that. I think he's been found out a bit more by other teams from playing against him. The other teams have found out what he's good at and what he isn't, whereas in his first year, no one knew, including us as fans. Obviously, us as a club did. Wenger would have known and the other players would have known, but even us as fans didn't really know what he was all about. So other teams couldn't pinpoint weaknesses in him. I feel they've now done that. But in terms of the question, yeah, I agree. I think we all expected a lot more from him. After his first year, we thought he was a world beater, myself included. And maybe we built him up too much. Maybe he's just been found out, but he's not turned into what we expected him to be.
I'm just going to elaborate on that a little bit. What has actually happened to Bellerin? Because, like you say, expectations and that. But you look at, he was heavily linked to Barcelona and probably still is as a right back for them. So they must see something in him as well.
He gets forward very well. He's very quick. Barcelona, you don't overly need to defend. They're never going to buy an out-and-out right-back, I would imagine, because they don't really have the need for that.
Mm.
Or if they do, it's only for a few games a season. And they'd rather buy what they need for the majority of games than what they need for the minority. So there's a lot to like about him. Maybe that's being a bit nice. There's some stuff to like about Bellerin, but he's not the defender we hoped he would be, and I emphasise the word defender. And when he does get forward, he very rarely utilises his pace, but I think that's where teams have found out about him and not allowed it. Usually, you think, don't allow the winger space in behind, but if the winger tucks in or drops short, then the defensive line can step up and allow that space in behind. I think teams know with Bellerin they can't do that. So again, it's more been found out the way he plays. That's nothing against him, but I always think you make your name on how you overcome when teams think they've found out about you. So, I mean, an example that comes to the top of my head is Gareth Bale. When he first started being good at Tottenham, teams thought, he's just quick, he just runs in behind. Mm. So they stopped him doing that, and then he developed a wonder of a left foot where he was putting the ball in the top corner from 30 yards, it felt like every week. So he overcame that adversity and developed a... They thought they'd identified a weakness and he worked on that weakness and it became his strength. Whereas I think Bellerin, teams have now stopped his strength, which is his running power, and he's not developed anything else to improve him. So now he's just stuck where teams know what he's going to do, so they don't let him do it, and he has nothing else to do. He has no plan B, to use a phrase.
Where do you like to see Bellerin play best? Right back or
right back? He's never going to be able to play on the wing because he's not good enough on the ball. I think he's better at right wing back than he is at right back. I said that a few weeks ago on here.
Mm.
Although he does stifle attacking play, but we lose less defensively because he has cover. But look, I think you have to accept he's okay. He's not brilliant. We've had this discussion many times where who would you replace him with? And it's a very short list or it's very hard to think of someone that could replace him.
Mm.
But is he brilliant? No, he's far from it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I hope he works on a few of them weaknesses and proves us all wrong, I suppose.
I will say in his defence, it is difficult because usually you'd say to a player, if a team aren't allowing you to run in behind, that's your strength, work on your crossing and your delivery so that when they do stand off you can put a very good ball in. We don't cater for that because we never have anyone in the area. So even if he does learn to cross like David Beckham, which obviously he won't. But even if he does, it would probably be seen as useless anyway, because we'd have no one to aim for on the end of it. So I think there's circumstances that don't go in his favour, but I still feel he can do a hell of a lot more.
Okay, next one's for you, Schwinn from, I'm going to say Shree. Fucking hell. Sorry, mate. are we the best team in Europe at playing around the 18-yard box without any incision whatsoever? How important will that be on Sunday?
He's taking the piss out of us, isn't he? we might just be right now. You know, we've struggled against some of the smaller teams, quote-unquote smaller teams, that let us have possession and let us move the ball around. I have to give it to our players. We're an extremely patient bunch. I'll give them that. But those passes that break the lines and are able to get behind players are few and far between. So I think Shree is up to is definitely on to something. And I mean, it will be important on Sunday. You know, if we're unable to find those vertical passes that provide city defenders with a little bit of trouble, it will be important. But I think if there's one thing that's been made clear over the last couple of years, is the fact that we've sort of become a cup team. Now, a lot of people take offense to that, but I think if there's one day where we need to make that our own and take ownership of that, it's tomorrow. It's on Sunday. So let's be a cup team on Sunday, you know? I don't think there's any problem with that. I think the boys will be up for this. As much as I said that, you know, I think we're going to lose.
They're going to lose 2-0. How do you reckon they're going to be up for it?
Yeah, but I mean, we are talking about perhaps the best team in Europe that we're facing, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Just because we lose doesn't mean we don't turn up. Yeah. And I think you know that, and I know you're just taking the piss out of me as well. But I don't like the fact that we're going up against a team that has somehow recovered its players who were supposed to be out long-term, without insinuating too much. But at the same time, if our attack isn't up for it, then we can pray the cup bye-bye right away.
All right, boys, let's power through these, because I've just realized we've got another page of questions. So Utkarsh asked Tony, how can we best play to Aubameyang's strengths in this game without Mkhitaryan missing lots of long passes and balls? Is attack really the best way for us to defend against City? Good question.
Yeah, and I think it's one that me and Schwinn both have opposing views on. I think we utilise his pace in behind to stretch the pitch, hopefully stop them defending so high up, which means that their midfield will have to drop deeper and then they can't overload our back line. I think Aubameyang will be more as use for his assets rather than as a goal threat. I'm not saying that doesn't mean he can't score, but you'll use his pace and his willingness to run. Much similar to how we done in the semi-final against these last year of the FA Cup. But we use Welbeck up front, and as we've touched on, Welbeck, you know, probably isn't going to score, but he run them absolutely ragged that day. Aubameyang is obviously a much better finisher, but he's also able to do that same job. That's how I would utilise him, but I'd literally see him as a Danny Welbeck with quality. And a lot of people criticise Danny Welbeck, and I know we've had the questions earlier, but I truly believe we wouldn't have won either the semi or the FA Cup final without him last year.
Yeah. Okay, Glenn asked Schwinn, and I'll just touch base on it quickly as well. Interesting, during the Europa League, Milan are a huge test. European pedigree. Fuck off, Glenn. Glenn's a good mate of mine, and he's actually a Milan fan, so that's why he says they're a good European pedigree. What do you need to do to get past them? Lacazette would be handy. We're going to have a podcast on this preview with it anyway, but give us your little bit of a take on it, Schwinn.
Yeah, I mean, I anyways have a very quick take, because I am by no means an expert on Milan. They are a huge European, I mean, they are a European pedigree in that sense. I mean, one of my favorite teams ever to watch was that, you know, Milan team with the likes of Seedorf and Pirlo. I mean, Shevchenko probably is my favorite number nine of all time, if I'm honest. But I don't know nearly enough about this current Milan team. They have some players in them, which, you know, you would think would work on paper. Hakan Çalhanoğlu has a brilliant right foot. They have Suso in there who has a lot of skill as well. But I think they are very much a parallel of what we are doing right now in the league, underperforming some good talent, but not really gelling well together. So Gattuso has stepped in and has been able to take command of the team, but their run up to you know, our tie against them is very, very difficult. So, I mean, come closer to time, we'll have to see, and, you know, I'm going to pay a little closer attention to them as well in the next couple of weeks. So I'll probably be in a better place to answer that question a couple of weeks from now, to be completely transparent.
Look, I'll just touch a little bit on it because I watch a fair bit of Italian football. So, Milan, my biggest worry with them is, boys, they haven't lost the game since the 28th of December. They started the season very poorly. I think, and I haven't got the league table in front of me, but I think they're about 7th or 8th now. So they have grabbed the, you know, moved up the ladder quite a bit. But that is my biggest worry, is they are on a really, really good run of form. However, in that run of form, I can't... I think they beat Inter, and that was about the start of their run of form. They haven't played any real good top four teams. I think they drew against Lazio, and that was about it by memory. But yeah, look, they are finding form at the right end of the season, so it is a bit of a...
I mean, this form could go right out the window, though, because they play Roma tomorrow. They play Lazio midweek. Then they have the derby against Inter. And I think there's one more game right after that before they play us. So I think you're right, you know, when you say that they haven't lost in a while, but that could be down to the quality of the opposition. And then this form could be thrown out of the window.
Oh, absolutely.
Irrespective. Yeah. Irrespective, I think their goal is the same as ours, where they think the Europa League is their, you know, ticket to the Champions League. So they will come all guns blazing when it comes to the first, you know, the Europa League game. So I don't think we should expect them to do anything else. But I just don't know how they play. I haven't seen them in a really long time play, so it's difficult to say what's going to happen.
The one big problem, look, I compare them, you compare them a little bit like us, you know, struggling for, you know, we're up and down, we're like a bit of a roller coaster. The one thing I do compare them to is probably Everton. They spent a lot of money in the summer. I think it might have been 300 odd million, bought in six, seven, eight new players or something. And when you bring in that many players, well, it just takes a little bit of time to find that form, I suppose. So. Anyway.
Yeah, it never works. It takes time to, takes, you know, time. To gel and to, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, but time will tell. And like I say, we've got a couple of Italian experts coming prior to that game, so we will go through that in detail. Tony, and I'm just looking at Savvy's question quickly. Savvy runs the Clock End Talk blog, so starting lineup for the lineup. For the lineup, given all the absentees, he's saying Shaka, Ramsey, Shaka, Jack, Pivot. Thoughts on Elneny for the final?
Yeah, I mean, we've pretty much gone over this. Just to reiterate, I fully expect Elneny to play. He may have played himself out of it. I think had Thursday not happened, I think Elneny definitely would have played. But he was very... His discipline was poor on Thursday, which is the reason he would be in the team. So he could have played himself out of it, but I don't think he has. So I expect Elneny to play. I expect Xhaka to play, especially after coming on the other day and changing the game. And then most people are thinking it's between one of Jack and Ramsey. I wouldn't be surprised to see both, but it could be putting square pegs into round holes. But then, as I said, it leaves the issue. If you only play one of them, then you have to start a Welbeck or an Iwobi, and... Judging by the other night, I don't think either of them convinced.
We often get a bit of, just quickly, we often get a bit of criticism from our Egyptian listeners. So I will say this, even though we do criticise Elneny, I don't think he has been that bad the last probably four or five games he's played. He's been pretty solid back there.
Yeah, he's had a few good games. As I said, I thought he was poor the other day, not necessarily what he'd done with the ball. I thought his discipline was very poor. He was, as Schwinn pointed out earlier, he was surging on up the pitch, but that's never really going to be his job. And as I said, if you class that as a second team game, when he plays for the first team, that's never a role they're going to want him to do. So do what's going to keep you in the team rather than doing what you feel like, essentially. But yeah, no, he has been good for the last few weeks. And as I said, there's no bigger compliment from my part than saying that I fully expect him to play on Sunday. And if you'd have asked me that in December, that definitely wouldn't have been the case.
Mm-hmm. Vish is back again for a couple more questions, but I'm just going to touch on these quickly, Schwinn, because it goes into the AC Milan, and I don't want to give too much away just yet, mate. So he's asking how about a player comparison between AC Milan and Arsenal and a discussion on how we could triumph over them to proceed in the next round. So we'll save that one, Vish, for when we got a couple of our guests on. Given we are up against the formidable team and one of the most brilliant managers of the modern football era, how would Pock and Tor, if you were Wenger, motivate this team to overcome the odds in the cup against City, as well as fight for the top four place with 11 games remaining? Schwinn?
Well, I think the first question is a fantastic one, and we'll definitely save that, to discuss with the boys when they come on, and we can do a better comparison then. So we'll save that for sure. As for the second question, no one's thinking about the remaining games of the league. That would be madness. I think thinking about the cup is sort of what led to a little bit of, shaky performance against Östersund. So to think about the future games would be stupid. So I don't think anyone at the club should be doing that. As far as motivating the team for the cup game, again, you don't need someone to motivate you all the time. These players are professionals. They understand what's at stake. More so, they understand what they're out of at this moment. I think they all realize that top four is a little hard, and they realize the Europa League is their best way forward in terms of getting the Champions League. And this cup game against City, if anything, will be a boost. And I think the players probably want that more than anyone else because there's so much pressure on them. So if I was Arsene Wenger, I would walk into the dressing room at our home ground in Wembley, put the team out, and tell the boys to do what they're good at. Not overthink stuff. They have the quality. Even with some of our players missing, I think we have the quality to attack and to come away with a result. It's just about how we set up and if we allow our players to succeed. I hope that Arsene realizes that we don't necessarily need to sit back. Again, this is a matter of opinion, and I know Tony's probably pulling his hair out as I'm talking, but I hope we don't shackle our players, because we've seen us struggle when we've asked to do too much defensively. Now, the only way I can see us winning if we put in a defensive exhibition is if we play three at the back, which I don't think is going to happen. I think that's done and dusted. So I would tell our players to do what they're good at and not necessarily withdraw them. That would be my way to motivate them.
Just quickly, Schwinn, and he touched on the top four. So 11 games to go, obviously vital 3 points in every 11 games would be good. What do you think, and I know it's hard, mate, I don't want to be fucking, but what do you think, where do you think we'll finish on the ladder?
I have to say that I don't necessarily fancy our chances, just because there's going to be so much concentration on the Europa League now. I feel like if Thursday's performance was better and more professional, we could have, sort of balanced the Premier League and the Europa League, but I think it sort of scared us and the manager, and we're going to have to focus more so on the Europa League, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's good to have clarity one way or the other. But at this point in the Premier League, we have to rely on others to drop points, because there's no denying that we're still going to drop points. We're going to play City next week at home. We have United still remaining at Old Trafford. Plus, we have teams that we're going to be playing who are still battling relegation. So the fight to the end is going to be very hard.
Well, there's 33 points up for grabs. We're currently on 45. So City are currently on 72. So that gap's gone. But then, you know, obviously Chelsea at 53. So, you know, we're still nine points behind Chelsea for a top four. Easy.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. And Tottenham are, you know, also...
Tottenham
also
52,
above us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Liverpool's not hitting any roadblocks. They seem to be able to attack very freely despite their defensive frailties. Having said that, Mohamed Salah just hit the post. So, I mean, Chelsea is one that's suspect to me, but I feel they're going to struggle against Barcelona in their second tie, in their second leg at the Nou Camp, and they'll be out of the Champions League. That's one less thing for them to bother about. Same with Tottenham. Even if they progress some way in the Champions League, which I don't think they will, I think that they have a lot going for them right now, and they'll be difficult to knock off that perch. So I think we'll struggle to finish above sixth. I hope I'm proven wrong yet again. I'd be happy to do that, but that's just my two cents, in all honesty.
Yeah, I'm thinking, throw all the eggs now. I'm looking at 11 games to go. I'm thinking, throw everything at Europa League. Look, obviously, we need to compete in the league, but I'm thinking fifth or sixth at best. I can't see us sneaking into the... Oh, look, I'm not saying we can't, but it's a tough ask. Odds on five or six rather than four for me. Cullum McKay says, Tony, and once again, we'll touch on this column when we've got the Italian boys on. Do you think we can beat Milan in Italy? We'll be playing in our blue kits. Now that's been a topic of conversation. We'll probably have Welbeck up top. I think the second leg should be a lot easier. Lacazette will be back and hopefully just slots into the straight into the team. So we will touch on that, mate, when it gets closer to the game. Ryan says, Osterson game reminds me of the Forest game. Tony, arrogant players who didn't care, way too cocky. Cup final will be the utter humiliation. AC Milan, without a striker, we have no chance.
People were pissed off at the result. That's complete. Unless he's got a crystal ball, in which case, can I borrow it? Because I'll bet on every game and be a very rich man. You can't say things like that. Look, I understand why he said it. He's frustrated at the result. But
frustrated.
If I'd imagine we're favourites to go through against, well, I know we're favourites to go through the tie against AC Milan. If he's as confident as he says, go and put every single penny he owns on a Man City to win the Carabao Cup and Milan to beat us over the two legs, and he will make a hell of a lot of money. So if you're that confident, send me the bet slip.
And I'll stick with you, Tony, because I've got two final questions for Schwinn. Tony, how many players do we need to challenge for the league next year?
A manager, for a start. I don't hate Arsene Wenger as many seem to, but I just don't believe he's ever capable of winning the league again with us. I think he could do it elsewhere. It's difficult. You never know that you could have an unbelievable team and things just don't go for you. There's a lot of players in there, and you could say, are they going to win us a league? And some of them are boo boys at the moment, and some of them just aren't. And then if you say we need to change five players, which many would argue we do, you're very unlikely to win a league with five new starting players. I know people could point to City and say they've changed both fullbacks and a keeper. Mm-hmm. And then they're bringing Bernardo Silva and whatnot, but there's not five starters. And they were sort of all £50 million players as well, which we're obviously not going to do. So I think it's very difficult to put a number on it. And even if you went 11 and picked the best 11 in the world, it would still be very difficult for a new 11 to come and win a league. So I think it's kind of one of them questions that you can't really answer. Mm. We need major changes. That's all I can say. I can't say this amount and it would put us in us in, we'd win the league with that team. We'd be a better team, yes, but an amount to win the league, I don't think you can answer.
Okay. Schwinn, last two questions for you, mate, from the boys over at the Gooners in the USA. So Mike says, does Schwinn feel Forsberg and Werner would fit into the squad? I forgot who they play for. They're good.
Yeah. I'm not going to say the team name because that's, I've been battered on Twitter for my pronunciation this past week. So much so that they've invited me onto their podcast, which I don't know what they're thinking. I love Emil Forsberg. Let me just say that before I say anything else. Excuse me. Timo Werner, I don't know if we need a pacey striker. I think we're pretty set in the world-class or potentially world-class striker department. So, and plus, I think he's going to be attracting a higher fee and a lot more attention from some other clubs in Europe. I don't know if we need Forsberg. I mean, he's a very Ramsey-esque player in terms of if he fits into our team, that's the role he's going to fit into. Hasenhüttl plays a weird 4-2-2-2 system that relies on heavy pressing. His wingers occupy half spaces more than being on the wings. So that gives Forsberg less onus on mobility. He's very good in positioning and he's very, very good with his right foot. He can pick out any pass in the stadium. Do we need him? I don't know. That's the sort of player if you're looking for. I don't know if he's going to, you know, if Ramsey leaves, perhaps, you know, that could be someone we look into. And I would love that as much as I would hate Ramsey leaving. But I don't think any of those players would fit into our squad or if we need to fit those two into our squad.
Okay. And he's got another question. If you're an Arsenal fan, we get past Milan in the Europa League. Who are you most worried about?
Yet again. Same question. The Red Bull team in Germany, that's who I don't want to face. Let's just put it that way.
Which team's that?
The Red Bull team from Germany, not Red Bull Salzburg, but the other Red Bull team from Germany.
Is Red Bull the one team there?
They do. Oh. The same team that Werner and Forsberg play for. You can try, my friend. I'm not going to give in.
I tried, Mike. He seen it coming, mate.
We'll get a lot of bell dings once I record with the Gooners in the USA. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of bell dinging that day.
Okay. Last but not least, Tony. I don't know if I put you on the spot or not because I did message you, but have you got a trivia question?
Sort of, but I can't remember how many it was. So I asked it to you guys last week, so feel free to chip in because I said it last week but forgot to say it on the pod, which is always very useful. But was it six players that have scored both 10 Premier League free kicks and 10 Premier League penalties? Was it six or three?
Oh, yes, I remember that question.
I can remember two of them. I've got the answers on my phone, but I can't remember how many it was. It'd be a bit hard to set the question without telling them the right amount of people.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
It was three. So there's three players that have scored 10 Premier League free kicks and 10 Premier League penalties. Name them.
Okay, if you know the answer to that, you can let us know at clockend_talk. Thanks, guys. I enjoyed that.
No worries.
Well, thanks,
a pleasure Schwinn. As always.
And you'll catch Schwinn at Gooners in the USA podcast. When are you recording that, Schwinn?
That is Monday night Eastern time. So
we're exactly recording before that anyway. Also, do you want to take this opportunity to tell people who our guest is?
I will let you fill them in now, Tony.
Okay, so we're not recording on the day of the cup final because I'll be at Wembley either drinking in celebration or drowning my sorrows, probably that one. So we're recording the day after, which is Monday in the UK. Obviously, it's a different day for everyone around the world. But we'll be having a guest on, former Arsenal striker Kevin Campbell, whose son has just played for Stoke against Leicester as well. So we'll probably cover that.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Looking forward to that chat. So if you have any questions for Kevin, we will throw out a tweet hours beforehand, so you can ask him any questions if you got there. And just while we're talking, because there was a lot of Milan questions, boys, so and Europa Leagues, so I don't want to go on, but our other guest for that one is, who was that, Schwinn?
That's Marco Messina. He's an Italian bloke who runs the IFTV at IFTV official channel. It's a brilliant channel that's dedicated to Serie A, and they have a podcast as well. They do some fantastic work out there, so you guys must, any of our listeners, if they're interested in Serie A, go give them a follow.
Yep, so they will be joining us to talk about the Europa League. So we've got you all covered here, and thank you once again. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thank you for bringing your questions, interacting with us on Twitter. That tweet that Tony threw up was was a good one, Tony.
It's still going. Yeah, so,
sometimes good, sometimes shit.
Yeah. So our platforms are obviously going to be podcast, and we will stick with the YouTube. SoundCloud listeners, we didn't get much of a response there. So YouTube and the podcast apps is where we will be. Thank you all, and thank you again, and we'll speak to you next couple of days, I suppose.
Monday, 2 days.
2 days, yes. Okay, bye.